From the European Society of Medical Imaging Informatics, my name is João Abrantes and I'm joined by my co-host Aga Baran. Welcome to Eusomi on Air. Today we have with us Felipe Kitamura. Felipe is a neuroradiologist and affiliate professor at Universidade Federal de São Paulo, also the head of Applied Innovation and AI at DASA, and a member of RSNA Machine Learning Steering Committee, co-chair of the Society for Imaging Informatics in Medicine Machine Learning Education Subcommittee. Today we will be talking about two main topics. First, the use of ChatGPT and other large language models in radiology and medicine, and afterwards we will explore Kaggle as a platform for data science challenges and how it relates to healthcare. The hot topic for some time now is ChatGPT and the developments that it brought to the use of large language models and generative AI for radiology. Philippe, can you provide us an overview on how ChatGPT and other LLMs are being used in radiology and medicine today?
Yes, for sure. First of all, thank you so much for inviting me to be here with you all today. It's a pleasure for me to discuss this topic with you both. I think this is, you know, it became a buzzword, but there is real science and real application behind what's happening with large language models. I also think we're still in the infancy of this technology. You know, it seems that most of what we have today are quite interesting toys, but a little far from clinical, robust, and safe applications in medicine. But having said that, we can already jump in to talk about the exciting applications that people are starting to publish and to test, and many of them are in radiology.
Okay, perfect. We'll try to get on that and see where we can go using ChatGPT. We also want to ask you, Philippe, what inspired you to explore the application of these large language models like ChatGPT into the field of radiology?
So I've always been quite keen on technology in general, but mostly about things that can change and help us automate tasks in our daily work. And so this is not only applied to large language models, but AI in general or any other technology that doesn't even use AI, but has some clinical and practical use. Specifically talking about large language models in radiology, you know, I'm a radiologist, so I might be a little biased in trying to apply it to radiology, but I really think there's even more value outside of radiology in medicine in general. But for radiology, we've seen people using LLMs to structure radiology reports, which is something, you know, people have been trying to adopt structured reporting for a while now. There are a lot of benefits in doing it, but it's quite difficult to change the way we work as radiologists, especially people who don't like writing structured reports. So I think this is an opportunity for us to structure all the unstructured reports we have so far. And there are interesting papers published showing this is possible to be done. Another interesting area is to use LLMs to classify more nuanced and subtle or even ambiguous descriptions of diseases, so we can classify these reports into patients that need follow-up and patients who don't need follow-up, or other clinically relevant use cases. I guess these use cases in radiology are the main motivation for my initial interest in ChatGPT. And the other thing is, it's, you know, I don't know if that happened to you as well, but the first time I tried to use ChatGPT specifically, and especially GPT-4, it was like overwhelming. You know, I never thought we would ever have a technology like that. I'm pretty sure in a couple of years from now, this is going to be like basic and normal stuff. But right now, I think it's quite impressive. Of course, it gets things wrong frequently, but that's not the point that I wanted to make. The point I wanted to make is it's doing things that were never possible for a machine before, right?
Yeah, I really agree with your answer, and I want to get back to your question. Yes, I was very surprised on how different this ChatGPT 4, especially the ChatGPT 4, was answering to us. And I also see that one problem I have in my work, and if you want to do some research, a lot of our data is not structured, as you said. So using these tools to try and get some kind of structure, even in a retrospective way, to try and go through all the hundreds or thousands of reports that we have been doing all these years before now and try to get some more data out of it, I think it's a great way to try and use these tools. I agree with you 100%.
I want to ask you, Philip, you know, that I mean, radiology involves complex and special medical language. And how do we address the challenge of this training the language models to understand and generate this domain-specific terminology?
I would say, especially for GPT-4, and, you know, I have no relationship with any of these companies that are developing these things. I'm just mentioning findings that I have and what I got access to test. I'm pretty sure other models from other companies might have displayed the same kinds of results. But what I've seen so far is that GPT-4 is astonishingly good in dealing with medical domain knowledge. And that is not only to radiology, but also to any other specialty that I have seen so far, including neurology, cardiology, and many others. There's this interesting book that Peter Lee and Isaac Cohen wrote about the AI revolution in medicine and how GPT can help improve healthcare. And they also mentioned the limitations, but I think they bring a lot of those examples in this book, where it's clear that GPT-4 is able to understand a lot of these vocabularies and even gene mutations, disease names with all the symptoms and clinical findings associated with them. And I also think that is why GPT-4 and other LLMs were able to pass some medical exams, including the USMLE and questions that are similar to the American Board of Radiology. And we recently worked on a manuscript that is about to be published, and I can't comment more than that, but we also studied GPT-4 in the Brazilian College of Radiology exam, and this should be published soon, and then everyone will be able to see what happened there as well.
Could GPT-4 be a radiologist in Brazil? I bet it did do well.
Yeah.
You can't comment.
Comment on right? that. But yeah, let's see what happens then.
Let's see. Make some suspense. Yeah.
Yeah, picking up on that, Philip, I think one of the limitations is like data privacy and security when using a language like ChatGPT. Could you explain the importance of privacy and security when using the language models like ChatGPT, and what kind of precautions need to be taken?
This is very important, and I'm glad that you mentioned this topic. For every technology that is developed over time, I think the basics of bioethics are the same, and we just apply those to new things that we see. So we want to improve our patients' health. We want to cause no harm. We want justice for everyone, autonomy. And those things won't change. So when we apply that to what we're seeing with large language models, one of the topics that comes to mind is data privacy, like what happened with imaging AI even before GPT. But now these services are being provided in a way that they are APIs that are being run outside of the firewall of the hospitals. So it's not possible today to run GPT-4 on-premise in your machine inside the firewall of your health institution. And this brings some issues related to privacy, and each institution is dealing with it in different ways. ChatGPT specifically, if you use the web interface, last time I checked, the rule was if you want to have the history of all your prompts saved so you can get back to them, then you're also approving that these could be used later on by OpenAI to retrain the model. I doubt that they're going to be able to get everyone's prompt reviewed by a human and used to train, but they might do that with some of these prompts, and you never know if they're going to use yours. So we can't send PHI, obviously, through this channel. But there's also an information that if you use ChatGPT via their API, then they're not using it. That's what they say, you know. But it might be difficult to convince the IRB officers in your institution that you can guarantee that, you know. And there's also the risk of data leakage, you know, data breach once you send data outside of a firewall. So people are also considering using large language models on-premise. And that means it's not ChatGPT, it's not Bard, it's not MedPalm2, but we've seen myriad of other open source models, you name it, Falcon, Llama, Llama 2, and many others coming. So this is another possibility. You could take one of these smaller models, fine-tune it to your domain, and try to use all of those on-premise to avoid these privacy issues. But the results are still, you know, sometimes people mention examples that it worked pretty well, and sometimes you see that it just can't get the same level of complexity and understanding as Bard and GPT.
Yeah, I guess we're still the beginning of this whole large language models progress.
Using this kind of LLMs in premises could be a way to try and mitigate this problem, right? It's open source, it's easier to understand the source code. And it leads me to another question that will do the connection with our topic number two, is what kind of collaboration do you see between radiologists and data scientists when implementing these models? So do we need data scientists in every radiology department, only in large hospitals, only on hospitals where research is being done? Should we get a bunch of data scientists, or what do you think?
I'm a big fan of multidisciplinary teams, of people with different backgrounds working together. I think there's a lot we can learn with each other. And I also think this is the shortest path to build a really robust product. So I tend to say we need both working together as we used to need before ChatGPT. The new thing with GPT is that I think the technology barrier has dropped a lot, because now it's easier for everyone to use AI. Before ChatGPT, you needed to know how to code, how to program a computer, and study a lot of ML, you know, deep knowledge stuff. And now if you have a computer, you can access ChatGPT and get the benefit of AI without the need to code. And the other thing is that for people who code, it also helped expedite coding a lot. And I think that's the same for everyone writing articles or books. I'm not saying people should just tell GPT to write whatever, but you know, if you have a clear idea in your mind of what you need in the text, it really can help you expedite and put your idea on paper.
Yeah, we all that used it see that in real life. You can try and be the best prompt engineer ever, but you're not going to get a high quality material if you just do a prompt and don't iterate on the information and try to bring your expertise as an expert on the subject to the text.
I agree with you.
So let's switch gears, and we are going to talk a little bit about your work in data science and your participation in Kaggle challenges. For our listeners who are not aware of what Kaggle is, let me give you a brief explanation. So Kaggle is an online platform and community that brings together data scientists and machine learning engineers and researchers from all around the world. It hosts data science competitions, and participants tackle real-world problems by analyzing and modeling data. And then people rise in the ranks of the competitions. Real effort is needed to get good results in challenges. And here, Philippe is a Kaggle master in competitions. Can you tell us about your journey in this competitive data science and how it has influenced your work as a radiologist, for instance?
Yeah, I mean, Kaggle is an old passion. You know, I used to say that I was a Kaggle addict because I couldn't avoid joining new competitions that were launched in the past. Unfortunately, I don't have the bandwidth now to keep doing that, but I think it's an interesting game. It's quite exciting. It motivates you to learn with peers. People share ideas, people share code during the competition. Even though it's a competition, there's a lot of code sharing. There's a lot of collaboration, and considering that it's important to always to also try to learn, not only reading books and articles, but also trying yourself in practice, I think Kaggle is a good playground for people who want to do that. And that's what I've done, you know. I've always been interested in technology, like I mentioned to you. You know, I started coding with 13 years old in Clipper, then Basic, then Visual Basic, then MATLAB. And after I finished radiology residency, there was this AI thing that would take our jobs. And I was afraid of that. And that's why I started learning Python to try myself and see, does this really work? And my conclusion was, it works. And then I was like 6 months thinking that I would lose my job as a radiologist. And that didn't happen. And then that was when I joined Kaggle and I started learning with people. I met Dan, I met Alexander Kadran and many other radiologists who also are keen on data science. And I just can't say good things about Kaggle, except that it takes a lot of your time. But if you have time, then I truly suggest you to go that path, and for people who are listening.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to ask you, are there any specific Kaggle competitions or projects that stand out as particularly insightful or influential for your work in healthcare?
Any Kaggle competitions that were influential for my work in healthcare? I think most of the competitions that I've joined so far are in healthcare because of my background in radiology. But, you know, there were a couple that were not related to radiology at all, you know, other imaging analysis competitions, but most of them were radiology competitions like the Bone Age competition or the pneumonia detection challenge. And most of these competitions were launched by RSNA. But at some point, I was also interested in how these competitions are organized, how people assemble these data sets, how they define what's the best metric, and how to put together a competition. And since the intracranial hemorrhage competition that RSNA organized, I've been more involved in the development of these competitions than actually participating in them. And that's why I can't participate in the RSNA competitions from that time on, because I'm helping organizing them.
So you leave some space for the others to try and get some good results in the competition. So if you're not participating, we can have a chance at getting the top spots.
No, that's very kind of you, but I wouldn't take a spot from anyone here. I'm pretty sure you would do pretty well.
I tried once. I was doing the forum posts and bringing some of my healthcare knowledge to the discussions that you mentioned to try and get him some insights to people who didn't understand, for instance, in the mammography exam, trying to understand what the end goal was, what breast density is. But in the competition part of it, I'm not very good. I need some help from ChatGPT to help me code. So yeah,
that's a good point. You know, one thing about these competitions is that they're very intense. You know, you have to dedicate a lot, at least for me, you know, maybe I'm pretty sure there are people who think they are easier than I think. But for me, I had to dedicate a lot of time and spend a lot of effort in doing a lot of experiments and controlling the experiments and comparing results between experiments. It's quite similar to scientific experimentation where you're trying to improve your results and trying to see what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, we are a scientific society that aims to have a very multidisciplinary efforts, not only radiologists or doctors, but also people from other scientific backgrounds. So do you think, outside of Kaggle, but more in a general sense, how can aspiring data scientists and radiologists contribute to this intersection of data science and healthcare? What advice would you give them to those interested in making an impact in this field?
Wow, that's a very good and inspiring question. I would say there's a lot to be done. AI is in its infancy. Both imaging AI and also NLP in general, including LLMs. I would also say that for people from the software, you know, data science background, it's very important to join a team with a healthcare professional, a physician, for example, because it helps you understand the nuances of healthcare, and there are many. And for healthcare professionals, radiologists included, I would say you don't need to code to program. You know, there's a lot a physician can contribute to the development of these projects, even if they're not coding. But if you code, I think it helps you communicate, and it also helps you expedite the development with a data science, the data scientist. So the more you know about the other domain, the better. And I think this applies to both.
Thank you for the answer, Felipe. As a final question, I want to ask, what exciting project or developments are you currently working on or looking forward to in the realms of data science, AI, and radiology? Yeah, everyone wants to learn.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of interesting things happening. I'm not able to participate in everything that is happening, but there's a lot of research related to uncertainty prediction. You know, having AI models say, I don't know, instead of just saying 50%, 51% chance of positive or negative. Another interesting area that I've been working, collaborating with colleagues from Europe, including Suzanne Gaub, that is now at UCL, and Errol Kolek in Canada, is about human AI interaction. How if you change the way you display the result just by changing, putting positive or negative, or putting the probability, or showing explanations inside the image, how this can change the way physicians perceive the result, and how can you increase or reduce the likelihood that they're going to accept the result from AI. I think this is an interesting area of research as well. With ChatGPT, all the story about hallucinations that some people say it's confabulation, which is, I think, is a better medical term. Code bias thing also happens to ChatGPT, not only to medical imaging. The generalizability issue that is, you know, well known in the medical imaging area. Also the data drift issue. I'm involved in some work related to human AI interaction and in the university, and now studying how to apply LLMs to medicine. So this is mostly what I've been doing research recently.
We look forward to the research and to read your papers. I think it's great insights that we got here for today from this talk. This is all for today. I hope all our listeners enjoyed our talk with Philippe Kitamura, the head of Applied Innovation and AI at DASA, and our journey together through the world of ChatGPT and Kaggle and data science. We welcome everyone to subscribe to our podcast and come back later for our next episodes. See you next time, and thank you so much, Philippe.
Thank you for inviting me.